Taxes and beer, which requires a lot of beer since we're talking about taxes. The Clintons can sell a carton of cigarettes to a 12-year-old with cancer. Of course, it would have to be America's cigarettes and not their own. New York is attacked by Islamic road rage, which leads to a lot of Allahu Akbar splaining. We get into Russian Buff Bernie coloring books, and Cosmopolitan magazine wants me to make out with my brother, which would require a ton of Huckabee Sanders pale ale. All next on the Adrian Slade Show.
The presidential motorcade has just passed through heavy crowds in downtown Dallas.
Destroying the media lies and dismantling the narratives. One story at a time. It's the Adrian Slade Show.
Well, our week starts off with Indictment Monday. And you should have seen the progressives on Indictment Eve. Oh, they were so giddy. I mean, what great things would the great prosecutor bring, Charlie Brown? I mean, would it be gifts of impeachment? Who knows? So Indictment Monday was supposed to drop us tons of bombshells, only it brought us that Paul Manafort was a Ukrainian profiteer. Not like we haven't been saying this for over a year on the Adrian Slade Show. I'm Adrian Slade. Thanks for tuning in. I mean, we've known Paul Manafort was the real focus of Russian collusion, whether or not Trump's administration had anything to do with it at all. So that was the crux of Indictment Monday. You know, Paul Manafort getting hit with all types of conspiracy against America. I mean, just tax fraud. I mean, it's just ridiculous. But I mean, who didn't see that coming? I mean, he only helped Viktor Yanukovych over there in the Ukraine, who was a Vladimir Putin stooge. I mean, he's helped, you know, countries like Zaire. I mean, you can't think that this guy is somebody you would want running your campaign. So we get into what's going to be the Monday White House press briefing. And instead of getting into the details of Robert Mueller's indictments, Sarah Huckabee Sanders decides to give us a story about taxes and beer. And it wasn't about somebody getting hammered after being punished by the IRS audit for being one of those pesky Tea Party members. It was to explain tax reform by using a story about reporters drinking at a bar.
Today I want to take a step back and explain what we're working to do using an anecdote we can all understand. This story has been floating around the internet for a while, and it's important to keep in mind that the numbers are not exact, and I'm also not encouraging any drinking. So file that away. It's mostly for my parents. But I think you'll enjoy it. Suppose that every day 10 people, for our purposes, we'll say reporters, go out for beer, and the bill for all 10 comes to $100. If these 10 reporters paid their tab every night the way we pay our taxes, it would go something like this. The first four, the poorest, would pay nothing. The fifth would pay $1. The sixth would pay $3. The seventh would pay $7. The eighth would pay $12. The ninth would pay $18. The tenth, the richest, would pay $59. So that's what they decided to do. The 10 reporters drank in the bar every day and seemed quite happy with the arrangement until one day the bar owner threw them a curveball. Since you're all such good customers, he said, I'm going to reduce the cost of your daily beer by $20. Drinks for the 10 reporters would now cost just $80. The group still wanted to pay their bill the way we pay our taxes, so the first four were unaffected. They would still drink for free. But what about the other six? How could they divide the $20 windfall so that everyone would get their fair share? These are the reporters after all, so they're concerned with fairness. They realize that $20 divided by six is $3.33. But if they subtracted that from everybody's share, then the fifth reporter and the sixth reporter would each end up being paid to drink beer. So the bar owner suggested that it would be fair to reduce each man's bill by a higher percentage the poorer he was. By doing that, he explained, they'd continue following the principle of the tax system they'd been using. So he proceeded to work out the amounts he suggested that each should pay now. And so the fifth reporter, like the first four, now paid nothing. He got a 100% saving. The sixth now paid $2 instead of $3, a 33% saving. The seventh now paid $5 instead of $7, a 28% saving. The eighth now paid $9 instead of $12, a 25% saving. The 9th now paid 14 instead of 18, which was a 22% saving. And the 10th now paid $49 instead of $59, a 16% saving. So each of the six was better off than before, and the first four continued to drink for free. But once outside the bar, the reporters began to compare their savings. I only got a dollar out of the $20 saving, declared the sixth reporter. And she pointed to the 10th reporter. He got 10. Yes, that's right, exclaimed the fifth reporter. I only saved a dollar, too. It's unfair that he received 10 times more benefit than me. That's true, shouted the seventh reporter. Why should he get $10 back when I only got two? The wealthy gets all the breaks. Wait a minute, yelled the first four reporters in unison. We didn't get anything at all. This new tax system exploits the poor. The nine reporters yelled at the 10th and made him feel bad. So the next night, the 10th man didn't show up for drinks, and the nine sat down and had their beers without him. But when it came time to pay the bill, they discovered something important. They no longer had enough money between them all to even cover half of the bill. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is how our tax system works. The people who already paid the highest taxes will naturally benefit from a tax reduction, but not the largest percent benefit. Taxing them too much, attack them, and they might start drinking overseas where the atmosphere is somewhat friendlier. This is a silly story, of course, but it illustrates some very important points. Our tax cuts and reforms will create a fairer system that works better for everyone.
Yeah, seriously? I'm going to need to suck down a yard of hop devil after that delivery. But I mean, this is where politics resides now. It lays flat, passed out on a puke-filled, excrement-covered floor of the restroom of the same bar these reporters were getting sloshed at in her story. I mean, I get it. She's trying to put it in story form, and the best way to get your point across when you're trying to convince someone of your position is make it palatable and relatable. Put it in story form. So Huckabee Sanders is trying to show how the tab changes and incentivizes, with increased consumption with lower prices and all. And it was at that point I thought to myself, T-minus 10 minutes and counting before the media and Twitter go completely pale ale nuts. And of course they did because, you know, the million users that thought it was witty to decide to use 99 bottles of beer on the wall decided to flood the web. And of course, I mean, no one thought of that. No one would have figured that would have been a funny joke to tell. It's pretty obvious. But, you know, my view of it was reporters will be wondering if the Trump administration officials drank Yakovino Russian pale lagers. I mean, they don't care about the tax reform. The media will completely ignore the cold pitchers of Uranium One IPA because it's too Hillary hoppy for their taste. But, you know, they don't care about tax reform. They ignored those tasty pints of Tsingtao Chinese ale, which Bill Clinton's re-election campaign back in 1996 sucked down while paying back China with nuclear tech secrets in return for campaign money. Heck, they didn't even care that Budweiser, now American beer, was selling kegs of it. And in return for Lincoln bedroom night stays while he was in the White House. And while the media is getting a tax lesson based on beers and tabs, they need a lesson in reporting and not getting sloshed off of their own freaking narratives. They need a lesson on objective journalism instead of getting hammered by the hops and barley of their own complete and utter BS. But I mean, they're not self-aware enough to get that. What I thought was funny was when you had people like, you know, comedians like Richard Jeter, who said if 10 reporters go into a bar and two of them want whiskey, but the other six, Hillary colluded with the Russians. That was Sarah Sanders, basically. To which I responded, except Hillary was doing ice luge shots of Smirnoff vodka until she collapsed into her black SUV, and she and America's national security and uranium resources were so wasted they passed out in their own puke. I mean, the Clintons can sell anything. Sale, sale, sale. Everything must go. Come down to the Clinton Family Emporium. We're giving away America. Recently delinquent elderly family homes that are now foreclosed? Sale! White House travel arrangements? Sale! Los Alamo nuclear secrets? Sale! Historical White House decor? Sale! historical Air Force One decor, sale. The W's from the White House computer keyboards, sale. Yeah, we just ripped those off for the heck of it. We've made incredible deals, selling fighter jets to Saudi Arabia, 20% of uranium to Russia, selling a nuclear advisory position. We sell it all at the Clinton Family Emporium. Our prices are insane.
I'd give them away, but my wife won't let me, because Hillary makes me come down there and make a profit off of that stuff.
Come down to the Clinton Family Emporium. The latest discovery of a Clinton sale outside of the Uranium One, you know, 20% of the American uranium resources to a Cold War adversary less than 30 years after we decided to put down the nuclear arms race, was a stunning report ABC revealed about how a major Clinton Foundation donor, one who previously had practically no experience on intelligence matters, mysteriously ended up as a nuclear weapons advisor to Hillary Clinton during her tenure as Secretary of State. Wow! Who knew you can buy a nuclear weapons advisor position? I wonder how much one of those goes for. I mean, if you put it up on the auction, I'm pretty sure a pretty penny, especially when it goes to the Clintons. I mean, they don't do anything cheap. The person in question, Rahiv K. Fernando, had been the high-frequency trading company advisor, Chopper Trading, which was recently acquired by HFT powerhouse DRW, which may explain the unprecedented pull of the HFT lobby throughout all the ranks of the U.S. political apparatus. This is from Zero Hedge and also ABC News. In other words, Fernando bought a seat to not only have advanced knowledge of all U.S. foreign policy, but to directly shape it. Something he could then parlay in the forms of massive policy front-running profits thanks to his company. In other words, the appointment qualified Fernando, a trader in the public markets, for one of the highest levels of top-secret access. Wow! Corruption much? The State Department tried to cover up the cronyism that literally bought Fernando's seat as one of Hillary's closest political advisors and how, as a result of ongoing media pressure, Fernando was mysteriously resigned only days after his appointment was announced when the State Department was unable to come up with the legitimate reason for him to stay on. ABC reported the emails further revealed how, after inquiries from ABC News, the Clinton staff sought protection of the name of the secretary to stall the ABC News reporter and ultimately accept the resignation of the donor just 2 days later. Copies of dozens of internal emails were provided to ABC News by the conservative political group Citizens United, which obtained them under the Freedom of Information Act after more than 2 years of litigation with the government. A prolific fundraiser for Democratic candidates and a contributor to the Clinton Foundation, who later traveled with Bill Clinton on a trip to Africa, Rahiv K. Fernando's only known qualification for a seat on the International Security Advisory Board, the ISAB, was his technological know-how. The securities trader from Chicago, who specialized in electronic investing, sat alongside an August collection of nuclear scientists. So this guy is out here. He's like an investment trader. You know, he's like Jim Cramer. He's going to be out there on Wall Street, you know, throwing up, you know, his hands right before the afternoon bell. He's hanging out with nuclear scientists and former cabinet secretaries and members of Congress to advise Hillary Clinton on the use of tactical nuclear weapons. And one board member said, "We had no idea who he was." The emails are just unbelievable if you read through them. But, you know, this guy actually was a fundraiser for Bill Clinton. He was a fundraiser for Hillary Clinton. And when Hillary was knocked out of the race by Barack Obama, he became a fundraiser for Obama. So, I mean, these guys have corruption running through the DNC more so than just Hillary Clinton. I mean, she and Bill Clinton are the ones that we typically look towards. But, I mean, really, when you dig down into it, it gets a little bit more wonkier than that. But, I mean, should we think anything less of that? I mean, think about the Clintons' history. Character matters. There's a reason why when I saw Bill Clinton up there and he's playing his saxophone on Arsenio Hall back in the early 90s, I was like, I don't like that guy. I do not want him as president. I mean, this is why we said character matters. Remember that phrase was brought up a lot during the 90s. Character matters. Because this is what you would expect when past history reflects this. When your behavior has been reinforced, and not only reinforced, it has been rewarded with billions and billions, and it has been rewarded with Democrat privilege. You know what Democrat privilege is? That's when you can go out and do whatever you want, and the media's not going to scrutinize you, and your own party's not going to scrutinize you, and the opposition party is afraid to scrutinize you, and the public is unaware that you're doing any of this, and you get to go about your day completely fleecing the United States, completely undermining the national security, completely profiting off of it, and nothing ever happens. Must be nice. Ain't it good to be a Democrat? Yeah. I mean, it's Democrat privilege. You create a Clinton monster like this. I mean, it's why we had so many incidences over the years of Clinton corruption. I mean, going back to Whitewater. You remember Whitewater? Back in 1978, a partnership between Bill Clinton, the attorney general from Arkansas, and Hillary Clinton, and James and Susan McDougal. They bought 220 acres of land in the Ozarks to develop it as vacation properties, named the Whitewater Development Corporation. The Clintons remained, and by their account, that of the McDougals, who were passive investors, and their partnership went bust in 1992. Clintons lost about $40,000 on the deal. The McDougals lost more, even though they had a 50-50 relationship in the partnership. And this became a scandal because after forming the partnership, James McDougal bought an Arkansas savings and loan bank in 1982, renaming the financial institution Madison Guarantee. Clinton became Arkansas governor for the second time later that year. That must have worked out swimmingly. By 1985, Bill Clinton had been reelected twice. Federal regulators were looking into the finances at Madison, and McDougal hired Hillary Clinton's law firm, Rose Law Firm, to represent them. Wow, no corruption there. In 1986, Susan McDougal took out a loan for $300,000 from former Judge Bill Hale, backed by a Small Business Administration and intended for minority business owners, even though she's not a minority. Eventually, she funneled it with her husband through the Whitewater Company. And after his indictment in 1996, Hale claimed that Bill Clinton had pressured him to make the loan, which Clinton denied. Oh yeah, they always deny. Denial isn't just a river in Egypt. It is a second language from the Clintons. In 1989, Madison, like many other poorly managed savings and loans of their era, went under and was bailed out by the federal government. Yeah, those bailouts are great. James McDougal was tried and acquitted on federal fraud charges and related to management of Madison Real Estate subsidiary. Then in June of 1993, Vince Foster, acting as the Clintons' lawyer, filed late tax returns for Whitewater. He killed himself in July, and after his death, some of the files related to Whitewater were removed from his office, magically. You know, that's the way it always works with these people. I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg. How about Travelgate? Just before Bill Clinton took office, Catherine Cornelius, a distant cousin of the Clintons who had arranged travel during the 1992 campaign, proposed outsourcing the White House travel office to the Worldwide Travel Inc., a Little Rock firm with which she had worked with during the campaign. David Watkins, the campaign staffer who took charge of such matters in the administration, attended some meetings and eventually hired Cornelius, who wrote memos suggesting they could save more than $200,000 by outsourcing. Meanwhile, Hollywood producer Harry Thomason, a longtime Clinton friend who had a financial interest in an airline consulting firm, which had worked with the Clinton campaign, imagine that, a White House pass and office and in the White House's East Wing, offered his advice and events. He and his business partner in the airline firm, Darnell Martins, soon discovered that Dale did not use his competitive bidding process to book flights and let Hillary Clinton and others in the White House know. Lawyers, including William Kennedy and Vince Foster, were called in and an audit ensued, and the lawyers went to the FBI to request an investigation. The FBI hesitated. At that point, the White House counsel threatened to call in the IRS to investigate, and Cornelius, who had been fervently copying Dale's records and bringing them home, told the FBI that she had suspected financial improprieties beyond the non-competitive bidding process. After KPMG conducted an audit and found discrepancies, including $18,200 in petty cash unaccounted for, that's a heck of a lot of petty cash, or that's a heck of a sizable allotment of petty cash, The staff of the travel office was fired by Watkins, and the White House announced that the FBI was investigating. Eventually, Dale was charged with embezzlement, tried and acquitted. Claims were made that the FBI investigation was instigated in bad faith to justify the firings. Watkins himself fired in 1994 for misusing a chartered helicopter for a golf trip, and a memo he wrote blaming Hillary Clinton for demanding the firing surface during the Whitewater investigation. Because everything surfaced during the Whitewater investigation. Then there was Furniture Gate. Furniture Gate was a quick one. The Clintons left office in 2001 with $190,000 worth of personal gifts, including furniture and mementos, all from the White House and Air Force One. They basically looted the place. When the list was published, some donors said that they had thought their gifts were intended for the White House as an institution, not as towards the Clintons as individuals, but the Clintons agreed to return $48,000 of the furniture and reimburse the government for another $89,000 in items possibly intended for the government's use. The House Committee on Government Reform, led by Republican Congressman Dan Burton, issued a report in 2002 that basically said that many of the faults of the record-keeping processes for the gifts and recommended reforms. Also added that two items that the Clintons turned in were actually returned to them in the end. And so they basically looted the White House. That was around the time that George W. Bush was coming into power, and they removed all the W's from the keyboards as a nice little middle finger to the incoming administration. But you can't beat a middle finger as much as you can with selling your campaign reelection to the Chinese government. That was Chinese collusion. That was use your collusion number one. That was before the Russian collusion, which is use your collusion volume two. That was Johnny Chung, a Chinese-American businessman at the center of the Clinton campaign finance scandal, secretly filmed a video tell-all as an insurance policy because he feared being murdered. He was accused of giving over $300,000 to the Democratic National Committee on behalf of the head of China's military intelligence agency during Clinton's 1996 re-election bid. Chung cooperated with the Department of Justice during the investigation and was sentenced to 5 years of probation for campaign finance violations, bank fraud, and tax evasion. Those sound familiar. I think Manafort's dealing with that right now. Johnny Chung also delivered 50,000 campaign contributions to the White House and escorted Chinese businessmen to a presidential radio address. And he also filed a plea agreement with federal prosecutors because Chung was charged with funneling illegal contributions to the 1996 Clinton-Gore campaign by asking friends and employees of his office technology firm to make donations for which they were later reimbursed. Chung was also charged with engaging in a similar straw donor scheme to assist the 1996 re-election bid of Senator John F. Kerry. Yeah, Secretary of State part do right after Hillary Clinton. Yeah, the guy who's responsible for mucking up much of Syria along with Obama. As part of the plea, Chung agreed to cooperate with investigators and soon told them that the Chinese Army Lieutenant Colonel Liung Chai-ying, an executive with the state-owned aerospace company, gave him $300,000 to donate to the Democrats' 1996 campaign. Chung's allegation, hotly denied by Liu and the Chinese government, is the strongest evidence yet of a direct money trail from the Chinese government to Democratic campaign officers. So if China is willing to sell us out and, you know, basically collude with us, well, what would make us think Russia wouldn't? I mean, what would make us think that if Hillary Clinton is willing to sell our uranium resources to Russia, is willing to sell fighter jets to Saudi Arabia and get in return money for the Clinton Foundation, take money from Qatar, and then turn around and in 1996 sell technology, because they left out that part of it, the Los Alamos nuclear secrets that magically just went disappearing over to China. And in return, we see that Bill Clinton has more money than God to begin his campaign before anyone else, before Bob Dole could even put his name into the hat. We get now what we get. So you want to talk about corruption? You want to talk about selling America out? We have it right here. But, you know, the left is too busy trying to prop up Hillary Clinton and prop up the DNC and not looking at things objectively and wanting to bring down Trump, that they're going to sit there and wrap their heads around George Papadopoulos, former Ben Carson advisor, who is a low-level employee of the Trump administration's campaign. And he basically was going, hey, I've got some dirt that the Russians are trying to give me, and they're trying to spin him as a Russian spy. And so basically, he kept going to the Trump administration saying, hey, I got something here, I got something. And they were like, yeah, I don't think we're going to use that. And of course, when he was arrested back in July, some had said, well, maybe he's wearing a wire because he finally pled guilty on indictment Monday, months after he was arrested at Dulles Airport. And of course, the Twittersphere erupted. And unfortunately, another George Papadopoulos was feeling the pain. Lesson here, not every blue check mark are the droids you're looking for. From George Papadopoulos, he's a CPA, he's verified on Twitter, he is not the George Papadopoulos that these people think he is, but they tried to rip him a new one, and he kept firing back. For the nth time, I am not Trump's foreign policy advisor. I have no association with the Trump campaign. None. Another tweet. To all, I am not that George Papadopoulos. I am in Greece visiting my mother, so today it has been kind of surreal to keep up with. Another tweet. I am back now from our village where there are many George Papadopoulos men. News hit here big, but the name is so common it's not a big deal. Another one. I am not that guy. Visiting my mother in Greece now, and I can assure you I am getting so fat eating dishes that she makes me so. No wiggling. And then someone else kind of jumped in and said, somebody buy this guy a beer. To which he retweeted and said, I agree. To which I responded, yeah, I think you need a 12-pack. Let's just not get it from Sarah Huckabee Sanders' saloon. Back in a second.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
Also this week, we had a terror attack in New York City. We want to think of the family and those, the loved ones who were lost in this terror attack. But an individual in a Home Depot truck drove over a mile on a bike path in New York City on Tuesday. And he drove over quite a few people plowing through a bike path, and he was stopped by crashing into a school bus. The assailant was treated by the FBI as a terrorist, and this attack as terrorism. 8 people dead near the World Trade Center in New York. Mayor Bill de Blasio, or William Wilhelm, he said that this was actually an act of terror. To his credit, he actually identified it. The suspect in the deadly terror attack is identified as Saifullo Habibulefiek Saipov. Yeah, say that 3 times. He's 29 from Tampa, Florida. He was actually arrested in Kansas City back in 2015 on a motor vehicle charge, and he never paid his vehicle charge, and he actually had a warrant out. But they never caught him, obviously, because he was able to commit this murder. Law enforcement officials tell the Associated Press that the man who drove the truck on the New York City bike path, who killed 8, shouted Allahu Akbar. He was from Uzbekistan and had a green card. And he left a note at the scene carrying the attack out in the name of ISIS that stated, ISIS lives forever and ISIS would endure forever. Guess they don't need to be in Syria to be effective anymore. And what's left of ISIS has proudly claimed responsibility for this attack. And the attacker's age falls right in line with the radical jihadist that they usually choose. Not to mention the attack itself, as what the New York police has said, falls right into the playbook of what they say is to the T as far as planning. He'd been planning this out for quite some time. Of course, the misreporting began immediately. Reports of a road rage incident or simply a violent incident happened. Because road rage always leads to a rented Home Depot truck plowing down a bike path. Violent incident? I think that was a hardcore band I used to see about a few blocks down over at the former CBGB's back in 89. It was obviously terrorism. And let's not forget ISIS encourages the usage of trucks and heavy-duty vehicles in their own propaganda magazines. Their own propaganda websites call for this. Now, NBC reported that we need to be worried about the backlash against the Muslim community. Ironically, the New York City bikers, they're all trying to bike straight ahead while looking over their shoulders at the passing trucks all day. They're worried about the backlash of being an infidel on two wheels. Not only that, apparently, it's the Republicans everyone should be afraid of. Here in Virginia, we have a governor's race coming up in about a week, and the Democrats made a commercial about a redneck in an F-150 Ford truck with a Confederate flag and an Ed Gillespie bumper sticker running down Hispanic and Muslim children. Not a freaking peep from the Democratic candidate Ralph Northam, the communist, or the DNC, the party that backs him. So, I mean, who's really chasing people down in trucks here? By the way, on a side note, if you know Ed Gillespie, you know he's kind of a pseudo-squishy rhino. He's a better choice than Ralph Northam, but, I mean, what do you do? But I don't see him as somebody that's going to be chasing down Muslim and Hispanic kids. I think he just got that moniker just because of Trump's endorsement. But anyways, so we also learned that the green card that he obtained was due to a visa lottery. And Brian Fallon from CNN tweeted, "Whenever someone brings up the diversity visa lottery today, ask them how that ban on bump stocks is coming along." Of course, bump stocks had nothing to do with the Home Depot truck, but anyone who has played the lottery realizes that you typically win little to nothing when you play the lottery. Right there, banana boy? Is it an apple or a banana? You tell me. But again, the media wants to deflect and change the discussion. And what they do is discuss how they can massage the Muslim motives and the identifying characteristics of a terror attack that was in the name of Islam. And the media again made excuses for the fact that he shouted Allah Akbar and almost romanticized its usage.
Now that this is terrorism.
The Arabic chant, Allah Akbar, God is great, sometimes said under the most beautiful of circumstances.
Wow, thanks, Jake Tapper. Who doesn't enjoy a good Allahu Akbar splaining by an agnostic media? Come on! I mean, I love hearing words in other languages. They sound so beautiful, right, Mr. Tapper? I mean, Allahu Akbar is such a beautiful sound, second only to when Jose orders carne asada burritos at Taco Bell. And Hala, this is a Forbes deputy editor. She tweeted out, "This is scarier than Allahu Akbar." And she linked to a Mother Jones article referring to Scott Pruitt, the EPA director, using the Bible as his guide for reorganizing the EPA's science boards. I mean, I know I always get nervous sitting next to a guy holding up a John 3:16 banner at a football game because I might get my head sawed off. I don't know. I'd be more afraid of wearing a Cowboys jersey at an Eagles home game. I mean, those fans are like the freaking Philistines. You could end up spending a night in the jail under the stadium. I mean, they have a jail under the stadium. That says it all. But never mind that the phrase is also a battle cry. I mean, we've talked about this misidentifying of word definitions with the jihad-splaining of Linda Sarsar. She basically defined jihad as to struggle, which the left propped up in droves. Unfortunately, it doesn't comport that easily into a single definition. Imagine that. In the days of outrage over misidentifying genders, we can actively misidentify word usage and definitions. In the age of binary choices, you're telling me words have more than a binary definition? And multiple definitions are attempting to be debunked by the same individuals whose gender identification is non-binary, typically. How about gender identifying as multi-consistent? Yeah, that'd be nice. Just use that consistency all over the place. So, Allah Akbar has a few different uses as well. Not only is it used as a prayer saying God is greater, it is also a battle cry for war. In fact, it was first used by Muhammad himself in the Battle of Badr, the first battle in Islam. That's kind of important. Understand, and we've talked about this specifically in this podcast, going back to the Orlando Pulse nightclub shooting, this is an attempt for the media to normalize Allah Akbar as just a normal phrase of God is great, to homogenize all religions. You know, this is to say that, well, you know, the God that they worship in Christianity is the same God that they worship in Islam. It's just they call him Allah. You know, it's the same God that they, you know, talk about down there in Jamaica, Rastafari, I and I. No, no, it isn't. It's not the same at all. And this isn't Aunt Eunice standing in the pews, raising her voice, singing, I want to tell you about my God. My God is great. This isn't Muhammad jumping up and screaming, my God is good. My God is good. He's so good to me. Only rocking it out is Allah Akbar. This is always preceded by an attack. And the rallying cry of Allah Akbar means Allah is greater than God. It's not a simple religious phrase. It's a line in the sand on your beliefs, even if you don't have any. There are things that rule your life, whether it be God Almighty, whether it be money, fame, your self-interest. Anything that supersedes yourself is your God. Mine is Jesus, proudly. Yours may not be, and you may want to mock mine. That's fine. You may want to call him, Cloud Guy. Go right ahead. Fine, your choice. But radical Islam's Allah Akbar is stating that Allah is greater than all of that. And that is why, just before, a plane filled with innocent infidels are flung to their death into the 82nd floor of a New York high-rise, it screamed. It's why it screamed just before a suicide explosive vest is detonated at a marketplace full of shopping infidels. It's bellowed just before a heavy-duty truck is driven into a crowd and a driver exits the cab with gunfire on innocent infidels. They might be biking, as the ISIS magazine states. It's always preceded by a loud Allah Akbar. That doesn't simply mean God is good. This is something being peddled by a godless media. Keep that in mind. And then we learn Andrew Cuomo, New York governor, says that the terrorist was radicalized domestically. Look, folks, he just got his radical Islamic fundamentalism from here in America. So, you know, it's totes cool. Never mind those who have to remember every Halloween from here on out as the anniversary of the death of someone they held close to their heart. Instead, we got to worry about making sure the Muslim community feels comfortable. Remember, ISIS may not be in Raqqa anymore. They were dispersed into the world like a frothing crowd at a Black Friday Toys R Us opening. Don't forget about the August-September 2015 flood of migrant men, an entire season of would-be militants embedded within refugees, just flooding the globe. Yeah, don't worry about that. And on another note, why is it that we learned about this Uzbekistan guy on a green card in less than 12 hours, but yet we still have no idea of the details of the shooting from some guy on a 32nd floor of a heavily surveilled and monitored casino with security that is just as armed as the SWAT team? I mean, I'll never understand that. But I guess if we outlaw bump fire stocks and semi-automatics after Vegas, and we could have saved the 8 lives in New York City, right? If only we had a 3-day waiting period on paintball and BB guns, we could have saved even more lives. Or a 3-day waiting period on Home Depot trucks, we could have saved so much more. We should just stick with the horse and buggy. I mean, you know, you should just have a musket, because that's all the founders intended. Founders should have made sure that you stuck with a horse and buggy. I mean, you don't need a heavy truck. Why do you need an automatic vehicle anyways? You should stick to the stick shift. Why must you have that ability to shift gears so easily? Why, we should make the tires more expensive. And we need to close the roadshow auto loophole. I mean, we need to have this happening now. The founding fathers would have never thought of a day of fully automatic vehicles. They would have never foreseen a time of multiple gears and four-wheel drive.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
Also out this week were the Russian ads, you know, the Facebook ads. They finally told us specifics about what happened with the Russian ads. And it was pretty funny, actually. Politico put out information stating the House Intel Committee released a batch of Facebook ads purchased by Russia-linked accounts. Here's a sampling. One ad promoted a coloring book filled with very attractive doodles of Bernie Sanders in muscle poses. I mean, seriously. It was from LGBT United. It said, you can color your own Bernie hero. there is a new coloring book called Buff Bernie, a coloring book for Berniacs. It's full of very attractive doodles of Bernie Sanders and muscle poses. The author of the book said that she wanted people to stop talking or taking this whole thing too seriously. The coloring is something that suits all people. I mean, seriously. Bernie in muscle poses and a sentence that says Bernie Sanders, very attractive doodles. You can't put that together and make that not humorous. Anyways, another ad showed a meme of Jesus and Satan arm wrestling, saying, Satan, if Satan wins, so does Hillary Clinton. This ad targeted users who liked the Facebook group Heart of Texas with an event called Get Ready to Secede. That was the Texas Facebook ad bought by Russia. On Instagram, Russia was targeting people ages 18 to 65 plus who were interested in military veterans refusing or referring to Hillary Clinton as Killary Clinton. Then there were a batch of Facebook ads, including posts by both Black Lives Matter and Blue Lives Matter. So obviously Russia was looking to mix things up a bit. And the interesting thing about all this is look at the Democrat privilege. You know, we talk about Democrat privilege in the past. Think of how not only can you get away with scandals, I mean, you can get away with, you know, buying tickets to Hamilton and writing it off on your campaign. You can sell nuclear uranium. I mean, think of all the things we laid out at the beginning of the show with Hillary Clinton. Going back decades, you're allowed to do all that if you're a Democrat. All under the rug. It's even so bad that when your candidate just outright sucks and loses the election, you then can call to have CEOs of giant tech firms come to Capitol Hill and explain why they lost. I mean, explain why Hillary lost. Was it the ads? I mean, does anyone truly believe we would have known anything about Russian Facebook ads if Hillary had won? I mean, I think if Trump had lost, the whole thing would have been done. Even with the influx of emails, that whole hacking thing, they would have been like, yeah, some little kid got in there, 13-year-old, you know, just like they busted into the Pentagon computers years ago. Yeah, he just put it out there, but it's okay. Hillary Clinton's president. So let's move on with the socialist agenda. Yay, yay, yay. They wouldn't be rioting this weekend in every town across the nation. Remember, we've been talking about November 4th and refuse fascism. It's this Saturday, so be on your best vigilant behavior. Keep an eye out. But anyways, so, I mean, do you really think that someone saw a meme of Jesus arm wrestling Satan saying, if you're going to vote for Hillary, well, you're voting for Satan. And they just said, oh, I can't vote against Jesus. Who would do that? Every Russian ad was simply a projection of already widely held views and beliefs. It didn't sway anyone. You know what did? Selling out uranium to the Russians. Being corrupt. All of the things we talked about at the beginning of the show. That's what led to her defeat. Being very unlikable in the process. But, you know, the left thinks we are just a bunch of naive, easily influenced morons. It's why their insane stances are shoved in our face through all of their various different mediums. I mean, take for instance, this Cosmopolitan magazine, and it's also published in Good Housekeeping, article that basically states, it's so friggin' ridiculous, this is what it's like to fall in love with your brother. I mean, seriously? I mean, they go on this story about how this lady who, if you go back through the beginning of this story, her family life is all messed up. I mean, she's got a dad who's hooked up with another woman, so there's a stepbrother, and there's a half-brother, and then there's a mom who's got mental issues, and the dad killed herself. None of that gets factored into the fact that this lady thinks it's okay to hook up with her half-brother. None of that is setting the stage, because it talks about it, but it doesn't set the table the way it should. But no, it gets into this whole racy, soap opera-esque story about how they go to a bar after meeting on Facebook and talking, and then all of a sudden they can't keep themselves off of each other, which is making me want to hurl talking about it. But I mean, this is what we deal with in culture. This is why, I mean, they put out articles in the Teen Vogue and Teen Cosmo magazines about, yeah, hey, you know, you're underage. It's good to have anal sex. Seriously? I mean, think about the Kevin Spacey situation. You know, he's being looked at for pedophilia because of the fact that he, you know, had liberties with a 14-year-old. He didn't go all the way, obviously, but he tried to advance himself. Well, Slate decides to put out an article saying how calling Kevin Spacey a pedophile hurts the gay community. Really? I mean, unbelievable that they can get to that link. In fact, it even says, and thus my second point, gay pundits' overblown protest of disgust at Spacey support the very structure of pedophile sex panic, the hyperventilating obsession of queerness to child abuse that they're trying to fend off. To be clear, under no clinical diagnostic I know of does a drunken, aggressive, and deeply stupid pass at a teenager qualify as pedophilia. Indeed, one working definition of pedophilia is ongoing sexual attraction to prepubescent children who are generally age 13 years or younger. So they've gotten into the legalese as to saying, hey, Kevin Spacey was kind of trying to hook up with a 14-year-old, and because they aren't 13-year-old, well, then maybe it's not an issue. But maybe it is an issue for the UK Daily Mail and Play FM, because they decided to opine about Millie Bobby Brown from Stranger Things. You know, the girl who has all the powers, the telekinesis, and can, you know, pick up, you know, vans and toss it with her mind. Well, they talked about how sexy she is. And she's only 13 years old, so I guess we got some active pedophilia happening here with these publications. Quote, Millie Bobby Brown has proved yet again she's much more mature than her years. The 13-year-old actress brought out all the stops on Sunday for the filming of Variety's Actors on Actors, hosted by Shutterstock. The breakout talent looked ever sophisticated in an off-the-shoulder white number while speaking to the Westworld actress Evan Rachel Wood. So, I mean, they go on to just talk about how, you know, how sexy and attractive a 13-year-old Stranger Things actress is. I mean, this is ridiculous. But let's not forget about Salon's I'm a pedophile, but I'm not a monster story. These are all liberal publications that want to shove this crap down our throat. Pretty soon we're going to have articles on how to make out with your cat in the next edition of Cat Fancy. Heck, I mean, the New York Post just put out a story about how humans love dogs more than other people. This is why virtue is needed. This is why we can't just go run amok on our feelings. We can't go make out with our half-brother. And we can't go, you know, lusting after 13-year-old actresses. We can't sit there and make excuses by saying, oh, well, you know, he's 13, but he was 14, so 13 is the age of pedophilia and 14's not. We can't get into that. That's why virtue is needed. That's why Ralph Northam, who's running for governor here in Virginia on Tuesday, was busted financing that ad that we were talking about earlier with the racist pickup truck and the Confederate flag chasing down a Muslim kid in a hijab and a couple of Hispanic kids. I mean, we need to get back to, is it our impulses that we should follow? Is winning something we should follow? Or is it something that we need to put in perspective, that we need to be able to stop ourselves, show some restraint, and say, hey, we need virtue, or this entire society collapses, because you cannot exist in a free society without virtue or morality. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Adrian Slade. You can check my podcast out on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play. It's now on iHeart, also on Spreaker and the TuneIn app. A little update on what's going on with Talk America Radio. The Liberty and Justice channels were both hit by lightning and caused irreparable damage to it because of the fact that there was a fire that ensued. Water damage putting out in the fire also complicated matters. So we will not be airing on Talk America Radio for a little while. As soon as we get the go ahead, we will let you know. But right now we are going to revert back to our podcast version. But you can get us on the Roku streaming channel. You can get that free in your Roku store. And if you want to support patreon.com/Adrian Slade Show, $2 a month, you can become a subscriber and support this podcast and help it grow. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.